Code Monkey, get up, get coffee. Code Monkey, go to job. Code Monkey, have boring meeting with boring manager Rob. Rob say Code Monkey, very diligent, but his output stink. His code not functional or elegant. What do Code Monkey think? Code Monkey think maybe manager wanna write goddamn login page himself. Code Monkey not say it out loud. Code Monkey not crazy, just proud. Code Monkey like Speedos. Code Monkey like Tab and Mountain Dew. Code Monkey very simple man with big warm fuzzy secret heart. Code Monkey like you. Code Monkey like you.
Hello and welcome back to From Python Import Podcast. I am Chris Miller and I am here with my erstwhile co-host, Mike Pernot.
Hello. We've been away for a while. Did you miss us?
We know you did because you told us you did, and we really do appreciate that. It has been a long and interesting year, but we're back. We went to PyCon 2012. We were inspired. We met with a number of you who said, gee, when are you going to put out another podcast? This is the answer to your question. We are putting out a podcast, and it's a pretty damn fine one, if I do say so myself. We have quite an interview. You want to tell them a little bit about the interview, Mike?
Yeah, so we had the very good fortune of spending some quality time with Steve Holden of the Python Software Foundation. He's the chairman of the Python Software Foundation and is the instigator of the very first PyCon and really got the ball rolling for an open conference for the community. And I got to spend some pretty special time getting to know him, get the inside story on the origins of PyCon and how he came to Python and other fun, entertaining adventures.
Absolutely. I really enjoyed meeting with Steve. This is, and Mike, you and I have talked about this, but when I went in 2010, I hung back and I just kind of observed the community and everything. And this year I was able to dive in, and Steve was extremely welcoming and extremely kind and was so very approachable that sitting down and having this conversation with him really, you know, it was one of the things that made my weekend. We were very lucky in that we were able to get not just one, but four interviews from PyCon that will be airing over the next several weeks. But we wanted to lead with Steve's interview because I think it shows not only an interesting history of where we've been as far as PyCon and the PSF goes, but the possibility of where we're going. And I think that's particularly exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'd also like to say, I think, Steve's generosity and his warmth and his welcoming of new people is really a good, positive example for the community. He sets a high standard for letting new people in and getting people excited about Python and about the community.
So without much further ado, I think we're going to get into that interview. I do want to warn you that, remember, this show has the explicit tag, and so expect it. And we'll catch up with you at the end of the show. All right.
All right. Have fun.
Skippy sank in lava. Corwin turned to slime. They could both see what was coming, but they couldn't pray in time. Pinky fought a soldier ant that crawled out of his backpack. They were all in love with Diane. They were doing it in NetHack.
This has got to be a big deal for you. This has been the biggest.
It's a huge deal.
The biggest PyCon ever.
Well, the biggest anything ever as far as Python's involved.
That's true.
Not just the big, PyCon's just one of many meetings. But yeah, the 2,200 and how many did he say?
Yeah, 57.
I can't remember. It's like, they just kept coming. Jesse said he was never that good at math. It's like, whoa. Okay, I thought we were going to have like a nice cozy little, okay, it's going to be a bit bigger than last year conference. But it's like, wow, if we don't take action, this is going to become Java 1, which I'm sure nobody in the Python world wants. Well, that's... I mean, not that there's anything wrong with Java 1. You know, lovely, lovely conference, nice people, horrible language, but, you know, right. there's lots of good stuff, software written in it. And it's like Perl. It's you know, people can use it to do shit, and that's why they do use it. One of the things I'm going to be saying in my chairman's address tomorrow is that the reason people like Python is because it's just a great way to get computers to do things. That's the bottom line.
Oh, absolutely.
When it comes all down to it.
How, you know, I guess as a history lesson, maybe a little bit, just looking back, how did all of this get started? I mean, how did you go about putting this thing together originally?
The chronology of PyCon.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to go. I came over to the States in 95, and sometime in either late 95 or 96, I went for a meal at the Cheesecake Factory in Rockville, Maryland, near White Flint Moor, I think it was. Anyway, this place is quite popular, and I'm, being from the UK, I'm not used to a 45-minute wait for restaurants. Oh, it's going to be 45 minutes. And of course, they give you this pager. Well, lo and behold, there's a bookstore upstairs. I think it was a Barnes & Noble, but it doesn't really matter. So, of course, being the geek I am, I mean, if I can't find anything else to read, I will read the toothpaste tube while I'm brushing my teeth. So I do quite a lot of reading. So I was just looking for something. I said, I'll go upstairs. I was with my wife. I'll go upstairs, love, and get something to read. So I came across Learning Python. I thought, ooh, this is good. And, I mean, I'd been fairly heavily involved in object-oriented stuff for a long time. How old? Well, I won't ask you how old you are.
I'm 41. It's fine.
So, well, the really salient question is, when were you born?
Ah, yes. 71.
Okay, so I started programming 4 years before you were born.
There we are.
And by the time I got into my academic career, I realized that object-oriented programming was quite good stuff. I didn't go to university until I was 23. Mm-hmm. And I read a lot of the early stuff by Alan Kay's team from Palo Alto Research Center about Smalltalk.
Right.
And actually, in the end, about a year into my academic career, I scored a research grant from the Science and Engineering Research Council. So I actually got over to visit I think at that time it was Elaine Goldberg's group, but I think I've got her name wrong. But anyway, after Alan Kay left, it was definitely Elaine, I don't remember her first name, but Ms. Goldberg took over, and I went and spent, you know, one of the things I did on my trip to my first ever trip to the States was go and use a Xerox Dolphin for an afternoon at Xerox Park. I mean, that's pretty amazing shit, you know. Yeah. It's very funky stuff to be involved in when you're a young researcher. So, after a while, in my research career, we implemented Smalltalk, and it was like, well, okay, I suppose Pythonistas will understand what I say if I say it didn't fit my brain.
Yes, I
appreciate
that.
It didn't fit my brain. And so I actually spent about, 15 years or more after I left the academic environment, 10 years after I left the academic environment, not really doing any object-oriented programming at all, because it's like, small talk. Similar wasn't a bad language, but it wasn't widely implemented. It's kind of close to object-oriented as well. If you hear any noise on the recording, that's because someone just moved the phone, because I'm sitting too far away from it, and I'm probably...
Would you like to get a comfy
Not the comfy chair. So where were we? I had just become an academic and visited Alan Kay's original lab, right. So anyway, when I came across this Python book, I thought, shit, this is it. You know, this is a really good way to do object-oriented programming. And I got kind of disillusioned with the active server page world and the Microsoft, you know, .NET stuff. And the point is it's majority stuff. It's never going to be high leverage. Mm-hmm. You know, it's great the stuff you can do with Visual Studio.
Right.
Except that if you want to go off the, you know, if you're not driving down the middle of the center lane, then it's like suddenly the no coding required promise isn't quite as true as it used to be. And you end up, you know, like digging huge holes and having huge piles of code lying around that you were told you didn't need. just to get it to do what you really want it to do.
We always said it would get you 80% there, but then you'd have to rewrite 40% of that.
Yeah, I call, when we're talking, yeah, people talk about things like Visual Studio, particularly when, you remember when, what is it, how long ago was it now, the Ruby on Rails scare started?
Yeah.
I remember that people say, oh, the sky is falling, Ruby on Rails has got the web market sewn up, you know. I said, isn't it? Don't worry about it. It's an 80-20 system. Ruby on Rails is great for the shit it's great at. And I've got no complaint with that at all. No complaint. I think, you know, if it suits your needs, then why the hell don't you go and use it? It's not like it hurts me if somebody uses Ruby on Rails. If Ruby on Rails is good at shit, then use it for that shit. And you know, we're all pragmatic in the Python world, right?
Also, it leaves the harder problems to solve.
What are the harder problems?
I'm just saying, you've got all those people doing Ruby on Rails and not worrying about all the fun stuff and leaving that for us.
Oh, don't tell them about that fun! God almighty! Your friend's got a big mouth. Yeah, okay, question for you. How do I know I have a 10.5 mouth, size 10.5 mouth?
I do not know.
The
know
foot
that.
Fits perfectly.
So you got into the Python that way, and what was the state? I mean, I am fuzzy on my history, so if anybody else can jump in here. Was the PSF in existence at this point? Is this something?
There was something in the mid 1990s. There was something called, I think, the Python Software Authority, the PSA.
Okay. Mm.
And even by that time, there was no PSU.
All right.
There never has been a PSU, there never will be a PSU. And
okay.
PSU, in fact, doesn't even stand for Python Secret Underground. that's a myth.
That's
there isn't one.
All right.
No such thing.
Never heard of it.
No, it means power supply unit, that's all.
So
yeah, there was a PSA, but it was a sort of feeble membership organization that nobody was really behind. And you know, it's the typical kind of thing that happens in the volunteer world.
Sure.
Like everyone thinks it's a good idea, but nobody's actually got time to do it. We're all very busy people, you know. And it's like, yeah, happens all the time.
We don't know anything about that.
No, well, but yeah, of course, it happens all the time. People go, they've got wonderful ideas, and I say, oh, terrific idea.
Yeah.
When can you do it? Oh, I was hoping somebody else would be able to do it, you know. Or, I mean, sometimes people genuinely... The thing that hurts most of all, actually, is that people genuinely take a job... You know, they take a job on and then they realise, oh, actually, I've overcommitted.
Mm-hmm.
And then some people are, you know, they're honest enough to own their mistakes and they say, oh, well, actually, I'm not going to be able to do this.
Uh-huh.
But some people just never come back to you.
Yeah.
Because the kind of... It's like they're ashamed that they've not done something that they committed to. And I always try and make a point of like reaching out to those people and say, ah, look, come on, don't worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
give what you can.
Yeah, okay, so you overcommitted, you haven't got time to do it, don't worry. You know, it's not like, actually, nobody fell off the edge of the world because that project didn't get done.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, I think if you do that to them, if you actually contact them and let them know there's no animosity, then it's like next time they will feel, A, more ready to approach you because they already know you're not going to bite their head off.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, this patch is never going to be committed. Or, you know, whatever. There are different ways of biting people's heads off. And you sometimes have to move away from the rational and think about the emotional when you're responding to people's particularly first impressions, like Stormy was talking about in her talk this morning. First impressions really, really, really are very important. So there was that bit. What were we talking about? Sorry, just remind me.
We were talking about the PSF, whether it was around, and how. I'm kind of leading into the how do we?
Well, all right. That's the real. That's the real question.
How do we have a PyCon? Really?
Oh, all right. Yes. Yeah, so and there's a certain amount of snow in the story. I think it was 2000 and maybe it was 2000. But one of the IPC before PyCon, there were IPCs, the International Python Conferences.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it was maybe IPC 8 in 2000. I don't know. I wasn't that early involved in Python. I wasn't involved in the really early stuff like where it was Guido and Tim Peters and the Zoke people, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
right. So I wasn't that early into it, but I wanted to go to a conference for about 4 or 5 years, and it's like, okay, 2000 comes along. And there was about, I think there was maybe a 14-inch snowfall in Virginia that the day of the conference, or the night before the conference. And I woke up the next morning to find, you know, A, it's like, oh, there's so much snow outside my house, I may not be able to get there. And B, my systems have just crashed. So I'm going to have to rebuild those before I go anyway. And by the time I'd rebuilt them, it wasn't, you know, it was like 2.5 days later, it wasn't worth going. So it was only in IPC 10 that I finally got to go to an international Python conference. And that was quite exciting. I also actually got to host Alex Martelli in my house briefly, because Alex and I had been working on Python Web Programming, which is a now antiquated book about Python Web Programming.
Yeah, I remember that book well.
I have it on my shelf.
Yeah. Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Purchase is the sincerest form of flattery. So, yeah, and I got to this conference, and I thought, well, this is a very nice conference, but it's a commercial conference. It's like, this is a conference for rich people, basically. It's a conference for people who get paid to do the things they do. Wait a minute, there's a lot of people working in open source software who aren't actually getting paid for that side of things. You know, maybe they've got a good job somewhere, but they don't get paid to do open source. So I, at the end of the conference, Guido announced that there was going to be a conferences discuss list, so that we would discuss, you know, what the future of Python conferences was. So I immediately signed up. As soon as I got, you know, as soon as the list existed, I signed up. And then I waited, and I waited, and I waited. And in my own mind, you know, you tell yourself the history, but I've recently been reviewing the archives, because I'm actually writing a history of the Python community, going to an upcoming book called, and this is not just my book, this is a community book, so it's going to be a PSF, the funds will come to the PSF, but it's called Python Swallowed Whole.
Nice.
And, well, yeah, I think Raymond Hettinger invented that title. He's, you know, you know what a bright guy he is, so you wouldn't expect a dumb title, right? Mm-hmm. So anyway, yes, I'm writing the history. So in my own mind, a couple of months ago, I was thinking, oh, it's like 3 months before anybody, it's like I waited 3 months and nobody said anything. So then finally, you know, I sent out this email saying, crackle, crackle, is there anybody there? Like, is this a dead channel or what? And then I reviewed the list and I think I'd waited maybe 17 days or something like that. Clearly I was wanting something to happen. And anyway, Guido, who's quite a shrewd guy, obviously sussed this, because I'd kind of earlier on formed an intention to become known in the Python world. So since I discovered that Guido and Python Labs are only working like 6 miles up the road or something in McLean, I somehow ingratiated myself, and we started going to lunch every couple of weeks. We'd go and eat sushi, and I'd meet them at Python Labs and we'd talk about it. And so having on the mailing list posited the idea of a community conference, Guido then said the then nascent Python Software Foundation, which had replaced the PSA, I think, after Be Open. You remember that Guido worked for CNRI first, right, when he moved over to the States, which was, I think, about 4 years after he originally created Python. Then he worked for Be Open, the company that made BIOS, for a relatively short time, after which I never really looked into the exact details, but I figured it's a failed startup, so it's just like, here, we don't have your salary anymore, or something like that. Guido never made any announcements about exactly what went wrong, but Be Open clearly couldn't afford to maintain Python Labs, and so I think by that time they may have renamed themselves. The guys who wrote Zope, their company was called Digital Creations, now Zope Corporation. So they said to the Python Labs team, well, they said, come and be Python Labs at Zope Corporation. And they funded an office space. So when I got there, I wasn't working there, I was just a visitor. You know, I was just lunching with these guys. But there's Guido, there was Tim Peters, there was Fred Drake, there was Barry Warsaw, and the fifth one is a guy who now works for Google, he's a very cultured man whose name completely escapes me, and I'm going to be so embarrassed the next time I see him. Jeremy Hilton, that's it. Yeah, Jeremy Hilton. So they were the Python lab. They were basically, you know, the five shittest, hottest core developers in the known universe at the time, pretty much. And they were all working together to make Python better. And it got better.
That definitely did. How long have you guys been using Python in a serious context for?
I've been using it since 2001 when I started at AG.
Yeah, 2000 for me.
Yeah.
AG went live in 96.
You guys should have been at the noobs meeting last night.
Actually, historically, Andrew Kuchling was actually one of the people that worked on our site.
Yeah.
Way back when.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Andrew may be standing for the PSF board again this year, which is good news.
Yeah. I ran into him a few years ago at a PyCon, I think, in Dallas to thank him for
his work. Oh, right, he was Chief Chad, those two.
Yeah, and he said, oh, you're not still using that thing, are you?
Yes, yes.
Felt really good.
So, PyCon gets started. What was the first one like?
Slightly chaotic. I did everything I could to prepare. Mm-hmm. And I sort of had some experience with user group conferences back in the UK. So, we managed to do some things right. Like, there were four different lines, and we had signs up saying
sure.
A to F there, and G to M there, and whatever. And it all worked reasonably well, but the thing that really worked well was not hiring any help. It's like, okay, welcome to the conference, you've got a job. Can anyone help on this? Can anyone do that? So through the mailing list, we basically apportioned tasks. And I don't know if you've ever... you've probably seen a guy called Ars mailing about Python. Yeah, well, Ars, he had a lot of experience with science fiction conferences. And so the sci-fi con guys lent us a lot of their experience as well about how to run low-cost conferences. And it all worked really well, surprisingly. I mean, it was a bit rough and ready, but everyone accepted that. It's like, well, okay, it may be a bit rough and ready, but suddenly we've got like 12 people from the Twisted team sitting around a table sharing a 100 megahertz hub. How cool is that?
Yeah.
It's like, wow, this can't really be bad, can it? And I think the only major thing that went wrong. And it might not have been that year. I think it was that year, because after that I wrapped a few knuckles and people didn't do it again. But people would just, it's like they had these weird particle board ceilings. And people started taping things to the particle board with duct tape. And then you pull the duct tape off and you half the tile comes away with it. So the building management weren't terribly enthusiastic about that. So I just said, oh, look, I'm sorry, you're going to have to charge us for it. And in the end, it was only six or eight tiles, so they said, it's all right. Because I went around and said, cool it, guys. But that's the nice thing about the Python community. If they, sometimes their enthusiasm may cause them to go a little over the top. If you say, cool it, guys, usually they will. It's like, it's being a bit dumb.
Where was that first one?
That was at George Washington University
okay.
in D.C. The first three were all there.
Okay, I think my first one was the last one in D.C.
That was the one where people were going up and down the staircase all the time. Yeah, that's when we knew we had to move.
There was no wireless in an auditorium,
yes,
which I thought was excellent. I remember seeing... the two-part Alex Martelli talk.
Yes.
It was like 3 hours of just Alex Martelli just blowing everyone's mind.
That was quite a magical talk, wasn't it?
It was amazing.
Well,
and everyone there is so focused on it.
If I can trail one of the opens, can I land? I can talk about anything I want.
Anything you want.
Okay, so... my new company, The Open Bastion, have you heard about that?
I have not, please.
Okay.
Do tell.
The Open Bastion, well, there's a flyer in the swag, so if you can find it among the 180 pieces that the sponsors have put in there, because I carried them here myself, so I made sure they weren't very heavy. I heard that Jacob Kaplan Moss was wrangling 100 pounds of literature or some swag of some kind through the airport a couple of days ago. So anyway, I've been running DjangoCon for 2 years now for the Django Software Foundation. So besides that, this year... we're also running six conferences, three on Django and three on Python, called Open Django and Open Python. Those names may not be final because it takes forever to get a determination from software foundations about whether you can use their bloody names in your conferences. So if the Python Software Foundation is listening, I would like permission to use OpenPython, please. And if the Django Software Foundation... No, seriously, it's not actually quite that easy. You know, there are serious...
Sure, there's legal complications.
Yeah, there are serious complications to be taken account of. So I'm thinking of them as working titles for the moment, because you've got to call them something, you know. Mm-hmm. But the titles may change, but the conferences will not.
Sure.
So the idea is, loosely, to take 2 days, Friday, Saturday, have one principal speaker. And the principal speakers I've spoken to so far, who sound like they probably will be appearing somewhere, and I'm not going to say where or when for now, but... Alex Gaynor will be speaking on Django. My three Python speakers will probably, if it all schedules, be Alex Martelli, Ned Batchelder, and Raymond Hettinger, and I can't think of three people I'd rather listen to speaking about Python. So I'm still looking for a couple of Django speakers, but there are some really brilliant Django speakers in the universe, so it's not like... So yeah, the idea is we'll have sessions based around... The principal speaker will probably speak three or four times during the two-day event, so they'll be there for the whole thing. They'll give talks probably of an hour or an hour and a half length, something like that, so they can make a substantial approach to some topic that people really want to learn about. It's not just a 25-minute, you need to go see this product. We'll have community submissions, just like there are for PyCon, where as long as we find a community group to mediate it, we'll have... the best of the local submissions going in as well. We have lightning talks, we'll maybe have a job fair, I don't know what else, maybe a job fair or... basically, we're listening to the market at the moment, so if people have got good ideas for what they want to see at these conferences, I will listen. You can go to holdenweb.com and just contact me through the About Us page, or the Contact Us page. So there's six of those things going on in the next year.
Just six all around the country?
Three Django, three Python, one in the West. Okay, let me see if I can get this right. Open Django East is in Newark, New Jersey.
All right.
Open Python East is in Boston. Open Django Central is in Chicago. Open Python Central is in Dallas, Texas. Open Python West is in Los Angeles, and Open Django West, which is the only conference whose date has not yet been determined, is in Portland, where I now live.
Well, there you go. Perfect. And this actually segues into something I think, Dave, you wanted to talk about the regional.
Yeah, there's a big community now of regional conferences. What do you think about the upswing of those things happening?
Oh, I think that's brilliant. I mean, that just shows we're doing the right thing at PyCon, I think. You know, the point is, I can't remember who was saying it. Let me just think about this. Oh, that's right, it's just how strange this should happen, but I made a casual acquaintance in the bar yesterday. This was a gentleman who'd come to his first PyCon. I think it was either last year or the year before. He'd become so enthused by it, he'd gone back into his local community, and he said, you know, he lives like in a fairly sparsely populated area, and he's so enthusiastic about Python and running a user group, he's managed to scratch together like 40 Python guys who come from all over. It's like, this is brilliant. This is like grassroots community springing up from nowhere almost. And that's why PyCon has worked so well, because it is grassroots.
Definitely. Well, and that's, you know, I know we're all real proud of PyOhio, either attending or helping to organize this.
I didn't realize you guys are from Ohio.
Oh, yes.
Oh, in that case, I have a mission for you.
Oh. That's where I like that.
Should we choose to accept it?
Ask Catherine what happened to my libretto.
All right.
Okay. I wrote a libretto for the conference to the tune of a commercial song, which I will not name for fear of spoiling the joke. If ever a piece of music needed a professional performance at a Python conference, that one did. And it should really be PyOhio.
Well, and we will... I'm sure we will corner Catherine and ask her that question.
No, I saw her. She's here. We'll have to go back.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
Yeah,
I have a lot of time for Catherine. She's been very good to PyCon over the years.
I think she was instrumental in getting the PyOhio going that first year.
Oh, I know. Where do you think she learned her skills?
Yeah.
Well, she didn't. I mean, no, it's not true. She didn't learn all the skills from PyCon, but she was an enthusiastic supporter from the start. I think she was the food and beverage organizer in the first year, and believe you me, that was not an easy task with people one year. Oh, I'm sorry, I only want whole grain lettuce grown on the south side of the hill.
Or, you know, as we found out this week, paleo.
What's but
that's the thing that is Jesse on it?
No carb diet.
Well, whatever.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Eating like our Paleolithic ancestors did.
With the seltzer water.
Other than the seltzer water.
Yes, there are. I'm living in Portland, of course.
Oh, of
there
course.
Are, there
yes.
are people who eat all kinds of diets.
Mm-hmm.
Including one which sounds like a vegetarian version of the paleo, which is raw vegan.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had raw vegan food. And I found some of it, the stuff I found palatable, I could eat
mm-hmm.
fairly wholesomely, but there was some stuff, because it was just so unfamiliar, I didn't find it at all palatable. And so actually, I think I'll just carry on with my present diet, thank you.
Exactly. Yes.
But, I admire...
Different strokes, I mean, there's
well, different... Exactly, I admire people who kind of have the determination to find something that suits them.
Exactly. Well, it's pregnant.
Pythonic.
Exactly. Very pythonic. Very well.
There we need a pythonic diet.
There we go. Oh,
the pythonic diet. Swallow it whole.
Oh no.
I hope that doesn't get quoted.
There should be one and only one obvious breakfast choice.
Oh, now then. This is something we
And it should be a dog.
Alright. Since this is not a visual medium, I'm just going to get something.
Alright.
Uh oh.
In case the audio for that did not come out, Steve is going to get something.
Okay, so I've run this particular story. I'm using this story to hook people in to making donations to the Python Software Foundation.
Excellent.
Because I have an Android phone and a little square, and if you're foolish enough to give me your credit card and sign, I can take up to $250 at a time. So in order to... obviously, I don't want to give a service for this money. This is just purely a donation to the foundation. So after I take the donation, I will, if you want, take your picture with this. Now, this, for the listeners who can't see it, it's a Beanie Baby Python... blue on the top and green on the bottom, curled up. But I had a little puppy, a little Pomeranian puppy, who chewed its right eye off. So you can, if you want, at this particular conference, get a picture of the PSF chairman's one-eyed snake.
Oh boy.
We may need to edit that one out.
No. You're kidding me? That's why people listen to us. Because we do this shit. So, all right, I want to veering it back a little bit, and I'm gonna call you on one of your hashtags and your tweets earlier.
Mm-hmm.
You were talking about how this has been a very emotional conference.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
What's, for anyone who's not here, they won't
control.
Get it. Exactly. Assume your breath control.
Okay.
But, you know, what, you know, we had, you know, Jesse's opening, and, you know, clearly he's had a very emotional year, and he's had a lot of support.
Yeah, Jesse's had a lot. Jesse's had a lot to put up with lately.
But, you know, it seems to be that this conference, for a lot of people, has been a very emotional thing this year. Is it just the size? Is it the community? Is it the fruition of so much planning and hope over the years? I mean, what is it
for me personally? It's all of those things.
Yeah, it's
all of those things. I have always had this belief that for people to maximize their potential, it's like no man is an island. You can't maximize your potential on your own, unless you're in some kind of fictitious storybook. And so consequently, you know, it's like, what was the story? Was it Franklin? I can't remember. But during the American Revolution,
uh-huh.
one of the founders said, you know, we must hang together, for if we do not, we shall surely hang separately.
Yeah, that was Franklin.
And okay, right. So I do know something about American history. My history master would be proud of me, because I don't know anything near as much about British history as I do about.
So probably more than many Americans know about American history.
I've been told that might be true. Yes, but that's because I've read one book. It's not like a big achievement.
Snap.
Yeah, well, if you're going to read a book by... If anybody does want to read a book about American history, and particularly if they don't mind a rabid socialist left-wing perspective, which, of course, naturally I found entirely wholesome, they could do worse than read Zinn's A People's History of America.
That is supposed
it's
to be
a very good
book.
It's a very good book, yeah. I liked it very much. But anyway, yes, so it's been an emotional event for me for a number of reasons. One is that actually last year was a year of changes, which I hadn't really had time to fully incorporate. And so suddenly, after a very intense period of engagement lasting about 3.5 to 4 years, I finally find myself with a leisure to, you know, kind of take stock.
Yes.
So that's all been going on, and it's been a difficult year. Last year was a difficult year, a lot of changes in my life personally as well as professionally and with a move. And so this morning, when Jesse unveiled the robots and then the robot dance started, I suddenly realised that when I started PyCon, I had a vision in my head of what it could be. And I was watching that vision this morning. Jesse and his team this year particularly, you know, I mean, PyCon this year is so... We can't say fucking brilliant, can we? So I'd better not, but it's so... better not say fucking brilliant, but it's so brilliant because so many people have worked for so long to make it. You know, I mean, there's people who may not even be here this year. Like, there's a guy called Gus Landis. I've not seen him for a while, but... I mean, Gus was one of the guys that either the first or the second PyCon. He said, well, we ought to be trying to make videos of these things. And you can imagine, I mean, the first attempts with videotape and what have you, they were, well, let's just say not that professional, but we were trying. And, you know, now it's like, wow, we can get videos of, we were taking video of, what, 5 tracks in this conference?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it's up before the conference is even done. That
I really want to see that dancing robot video on the internet now.
Oh,
yeah.
that's meme worthy.
And by the way, if you're listening and you haven't booked your place for PyCon next year, book it, because other people will probably want to see robots dancing too.
And they'll have another chance to improve on it as well. It really blew
well,
me.
Well, it won't be the attraction won't be dancing robots next year.
No.
That will be so nice. It won't.
So 2012.
Yeah. So 2000. Exactly. Yeah. So 2012.
I'm just struck by the differences. The last PyCon I was able to get to was 2010 in Atlanta.
Yeah.
And you know, it was a very good conference, but it felt.
Shitty? No.
No. Definitely no.
Heavens for that.
Definitely not shitty. But
no.
A little less organized, a little more ragged around the edges.
Like we may not have had as much money, for example.
It's entirely possible.
Yeah, well, what a lot of people don't know, and what I certainly didn't anticipate when I became chairman of the PSF, was that we would lose a huge amount of money.
Oh.
And I'm talking about significantly over half our available cash reserves. I think it was anyway, it doesn't matter what year, but you know, like 1 year shortly before that conference you were complaining about. It was the second Chicago year, really bitters, because we saw they'd been planning for an upturn in attendance because of the previous year.
Sure.
The economy tanked.
Right.
So it's like suddenly we've got responsibilities to venues that we're not fulfilling by, you know, taking a big room block and there aren't enough people, and it was all horrendous. In the end, the conference management company were extremely assiduous in kind of negotiating away at least some of the liabilities, but it's like, oh, suddenly... Hello? We don't need turn down service in 1430, please. If you wouldn't mind doing 1436.
36?
Thank you very much indeed.
You're welcome, sir. How much chocolate, sir?
Oh, lots of chocolate, please, yes.
No, please, go right ahead. This is a good time to make sure that everything is
still...
Why don't
you take a break? Can we restart in a second?
Oh, absolutely.
Where's the restroom?
The text sometimes, the images it shows, running from the D's and L's and killing all the O's. faded prints and subtle hints and fortune cookie lies. You never ID all your stuff until your ad sign dies.
Okay, Rick, you have...
Yeah, so, Steve, we want to give you a chance to really brag about. It seems like this last year has just been an amazing year for the foundation.
Yes.
The amount of visible work seems to be, you know, from sponsoring projects, like some of the Python 3 transitions, mm-hmm. to some of the yeah. groups, like the Pi Ladies group, and they've been a huge turnout out here. I mean, actually, they're selling Pi Lady shirts and things this year. It's, I mean, the diversity seems really improved. So, I mean, what if, you know, can you give, like, what's been, like, some of the best things that the foundation's been able to do, and is there anything in the pipeline we need to keep an eye out for? There's just some amazing work you guys have got going on.
Well, I'd, not being one to count my chickens before they've hatched. there's been a lot of excitement about this PyCon because of the attendance, because of the fact that it may generate high profits. But until the final dollar is counted, who knows? You know, it's like we've exceeded a cap that we'd put in place. There could be all kinds of costs that we've not been able to account for in advance. But if things go as well as it seems they might, then we'll have some money for the first time. So basically, following on from the story of the disastrous PyCon that lost money, I spent 3 years effectively, A, trying to conserve funds and put my house in order so that we weren't bleeding money and we were actually restoring and making whole again the reserves that we used to have. Because you need a just to be a non-profit, you need a fairly substantial reserve, really. Even though it seems wasteful to have money in the bank not doing anything, you know, there's always the possibility that PyCon might bomb or at least not make a profit, and you've got to take that into account if you're going to carry on running these things. So, really, what we've done so far, I mean, it's like people were asking me at the language summit, I think it was, or maybe it was the web summit, what's Python's future? As far as Python's concerned, you ain't seen nothing yet. I mean, in 15 years' time, Python's going to be where Unix is now. And Unix is fairly well positioned now. In 15 years' time, Python will be, or maybe 20 years' time, Python will be as mature as Unix is now. And when you look at the start that we've already got, it's absolutely amazing. Now, the problem is you can't take PyCon and multiply it by 5 so it's Java 1 size and still have it be PyCon. Mm-hmm. So we've now got to think about that. But the nice thing is it looks as though in my... Because I'll mention in my talk tomorrow, this is my last year as chairman of the PSF. I won't be chairman by the end of the year. And so I would really like to have the opportunity before I leave as PSF chairman to spend some serious money doing the stuff that, you know, it's like we've been holding back because we haven't had the funds. Now, it's not like I'm going to, you know, we're not going to open the floodgates,
right.
But it's like now we can afford to do things. Now we can, I mean, we've been saying for a while to people, look, you know, come to us for money for things like sprints. If anyone doesn't know, if they're holding a Python-related sprint, then they can apply for and quite possibly receive up to $300 worth of funding. So it's like if you need pizza for the lunch, or if you need to like give a guy $100 for his train fare to get to the sprint, you know, we're not interested in why you need the money, as long as you need the money to run a sprint. If that's a Python related sprint, it's within the ambit of the foundation's mission, which obviously to maintain our charitable status we have to stay within. And so that kind of, again, it goes back to the grassroots and the community thing. You don't build an empire by appointing someone emperor. You build an empire by having children and having those children have children, and you know, eventually you've got an empire. And so you need to feed this thing from the roots. You can't build a tree from the trunk. The trunk emerges from the roots, and that's what we want to do, really, I think.
Very cool. So are you guys seeing like the regional conferences as being more possibly like directly tied into the PSF that maybe they originally started out as, or anything as a
funnel
for that? Or
again, we've supported regional conferences like Pi Ohio, Pi Texas, Pi Arkansas,
mm-hmm.
and I don't think anybody would discourage the idea of having more. I mean, just, you know, the fact that I'm running commercial conferences isn't going to stop.
Right.
Those, the point about the events you're talking about is they're not commercial events. Typically, they will be of unconference format.
Gotcha.
Now, that kind of thing is ideal. For example, as a part of a one-day or two-day weekend workshop where it's an unconference, you can say, you know, wave the flag,
mm-hmm.
say, hey, you've heard about Python, and now it's, like, amazing. People have heard about Python. It's like Intel inside, Python inside. You've heard about Python. Hey, there's a guy giving a 3-hour class on how to use it. Why don't you come along and see what it's like?
So if you're
that kind of stuff works much better for unconference.
So if you're wrapping up your chairmanship and everything, then what's the highlight? Like what's going at the last chapter of the book?
I am free.
So given the success of the social network, now that there's the book coming in, the inevitable movie deal.
Yeah.
Who plays Steve Holden? What's the ideal casting?
Steve Holden.
Yeah. Who plays you? I'm kind of thinking Simon Pegg or Patrick Stewart.
Okay, Patrick Stewart's too good looking. Oh no, seriously? I don't think Steve Holden wouldn't figure in that film. He'd be away running a foundation somewhere in the corner.
Well, on that note, I know we all want to get to the next talk.
Indeed.
Yep.
So, Steve, thank you for being here.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for, the talk, guys.
Yeah.
It's been good fun.
On behalf of all of us, and I like to thank, on behalf of the entire Python community, thank you for all the work you've done in bringing PyCon to us. It's one of the high points of my year, and I always look forward to it, and I'm excited to be here. And it's
the most wonderful reward for all the work, and I know this doesn't just apply to me. This applies to all the volunteers, because it takes over 100 people to put a PyCon together. The most wonderful reward you can give them is just shake them by the hand, look them in the eye, and say thank you. That's the best thing you can do, and if people will do that, then nobody will need anything else.
I hugged Jesse today for that very reason.
You didn't need to grab his ass.
When you started removing your clothing altogether
All right.
Yeah, Ben, we need to talk.
Let's talk.
Yeah.
All right.
So I have to go.
Snake,
you cannot leave with my one-eyed snake.
From Python Import Podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 3.0 license. Music provided by Jonathan Colton and the song NetHack by Rob Balder. Big warm, fuzzy secret heart. Code monkey like you. You can learn more about us at FromPythonImportPodcast.com.